Well, prominent Italian UFO investigator Paula Harris is reporting from Italy that Saturday night over Milan, there was a sighting of five objects that lingered in the air from 11 p.m. until 5 a.m., and that the Italian television news channels covered it, just like the Phoenix Lights. No one knows what to do. The story was covered on Italian television in the news media, and the conclusion was drawn that the objects were unexplained. And unlike the Phoenix Lights, however, there were no U.S. military bases in the area that could issue false claims of dropping flares, so the objects at this time remain a pure unknown. Initially, witnesses assumed that the objects were stars, but they changed both color and shape, causing observers to call police and also the various news media. In a moment, our guest will be Charles Upton. He's a very special person, and we're going to talk about end times next hour and UFOs this hour, the Great Deception. Back in a moment, cracks in the Great Wall and legends of the end on Coast to Coast AM. Charles Upton, he's a poet, social critic, lifelong student of traditional metaphysics, as well as being a veteran of the counterculture of the 60s and 70s. In the 80s, he participated in the sanctuary movement for Central American refugees and also spent a few years in the 90s working with the Marin County's homeless. Around this time, he discovered the traditional metaphysics of the traditionalist school, where some of the teachings reflect that the erosion of the energy barrier between the material plane in the world of psychic forces could signal the end times. Special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Charles, welcome. First time, huh?
Yeah, first time. I've been trying to get on here for 5 years.
You made it. Yes, we're going to use the time with you tonight to talk with you in several segments. Next hour, I'd like to talk about end times. The third hour, we'll open up the phone lines. And then this hour, of course, the UFO deception. But tell me a little bit more about yourself beyond the bio that I just read.
Well, God, I mean, there's too much in the bio as far as I'm concerned. what do I know? Lived most of my life in California, just in the middle of 2004, moved to Kentucky. So here I sit. This is where my wife came from.
And whereabouts in Kentucky are you?
Lexington.
Oh, right, I love Lexington.
Yeah, it has every little thing you need.
Used to go to the Red Mile quite a bit.
Oh, wow.
I just loved it out there.
Yeah. Well, and what else can I say? Basically, I am a writer, you know, who's done a few other things to keep body and soul together over the years.
You've done one thing that I really admire in this book, Cracks in the Great Wall. You've done one of the few things that not a lot of people have done. You've had an opportunity to analyze the work of the UFO researcher Jacques Vallée. You know, he was highlighted in the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah.
I forget the name of the character, but yeah.
Right, but the Frenchman was Jacques, and ever since that movie, of course, I always wanted to interview Jacques, and, you know, he's holding back right now on talking about UFOs, but I love his work. You've analyzed what he's done. We'll talk about that this hour. How did you somehow steer your career into investigating UFOs? How in the heck did you analyze the findings of Jacques Vallée?
Well, first, my career is not limited to UFOs. You know, basically, I write on traditional metaphysics, and before that was a poet. And these two books we're talking about tonight, Cracks in the Great Wall and Legends of the End, were actually like, you know, couplets taken out of a larger book, which is called The System of Antichrist. And you know, it's basically everything in those little books you can get in the big book, but the big book costs more, and I thought I'd sell the little one.
You know, you're giving people a deal now.
Yeah, but basically, in that book, I looked at what is going on in these times through the lens of traditional metaphysics, and you know, I went through a lot of New Age and you know, experiments with self-invented shamanism, or whatever you can get from Carlos Castaneda's books, plus a little help
sure.
from your friends, you know. And basically, I went through a lot of that stuff, and when I got to traditional metaphysics, I came to a halt, and I said, this is where I can live. This is what I, you know, through this, I can understand the basic nature of things. And from that standpoint, I went back and looked at the stuff I'd done before. And I did some critiques of major New Age belief systems. And one of them actually was the UFO, you know, the UFO mythology, which, you know, being in the counterculture, it was interesting because things started out, you know, you take LSD and see God. Whether or not people did see God, they were supposed to see God. That was the
right
idea.
And or they thought they did.
Or whatever. And then you know, then you see more and more strange stuff, and you get to a place where people just get addicted to very, you know, to strange, anomalous, weird experiences, and that's what they're seeking. And I sort of saw things go that way. And at one point, when I guess in the 70s, when the New Age ideology started to take over from the counterculture ideology, which actually had more traditional mysticism and stuff in it from different Eastern religions and Western religions as well, concurrent with that was that the UFO myth started to get bigger and bigger. And so I said, well, you know, this is interesting in itself and represents a reality, but it also, you know, to a certain degree, doesn't carry quite the expansive vision that the earlier days did.
Well, and you look at the UFO phenomenon in a much broader sense than what, let's say, pure UFO investigators look at. I mean,
yeah,
you've tied it into a bigger picture here.
Yeah, that is the whole idea. I mean, what researchers can come up with when it comes to UFOs or anything that's considered to be the paranormal is very important. You know, what science can teach us is important. What parapsychology can teach
sure.
us is important. But you don't get to a settled conclusion unless you have sort of a larger philosophical view in which to put this stuff. And that's what I try to provide. And so basically, I believe that from the standpoint of traditional metaphysics, you may not be able to know all the ins and outs of a UFO, what the UFO phenomenon, or, you know, was a particular event real or not, or was this a deception, or was that, you know, you don't know the details, but you know essentially what level of things the UFOs represent.
Well, let me ask you from the outset, do you believe in UFOs? And then, of course, I'm going to need to get a definition from
Well, I mean, there are unidentified flying objects, you know, and some of them are just
could be a balloon.
Normal flying objects
sure.
that people haven't identified at that moment. But it seems pretty clear to me that there are inexplicable, you know, I was just hearing on the break, the lights appeared above Milan.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and these things have been happening for as long as we have records, really, except there was something that happened after World War II. Either they became more common or the shock of the war and of nuclear weapons, and, you know, suddenly you could get blown up at any time, you know, changed the collective belief system, so people started to pay attention to them and develop mythologies around them.
Well, for some reason, they're either very concerned for our own well-being because of the nuclear age we were getting into years ago, so they wanted to monitor that, or there's something to a nuclear detonation which could affect them, no matter where they may be on, you know, the plane of this universe.
Yeah.
And I'm beginning to think now they're more concerned about themselves, Charles, than us.
Well, I never really believed in them as, maybe, who knows? Maybe I did at one time, you know, when I was a child, you know, when it was fascinating to think they were flying saucers flying around. But ever since I started to look at them more seriously, I didn't particularly think they were here to help us. And particularly when you look at the abduction phenomenon.
Yes.
As brought forward by John Mack and other people, it's pretty sinister. It's something I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. And just because some people who've had this experience can't get beyond it and, you know, and try to make sense out of it by saying something like, well, I have been chosen by these people, or, you know, this represents a higher reality. The actual thing, you know, the actual phenomenon is pretty sinister and pretty destructive. And even Mack talks about the after effects of it, which are, you know, not happy.
Well, I have found in reading both your books, The Cracks in the Wall and The Legends of the End, and by the way, thank you for the way you've done it in the two different books, because like you say, they were a much broader part of a bigger book. You saved me a lot of time because I didn't get these until Saturday.
Yeah.
So
that in itself was interesting.
Now, how did you key in on researcher Jacques Vallée? I mean, how did that all come about?
Somehow, Since I was not particularly a ufologist, I had not read a lot of material, and I think I was just lucky. I probably picked up his book, Messengers of Deception, somewhere in a used bookstore, if I remember correctly, and I said, this is interesting. It's entertaining, but, you know, I felt that Jacques Vallée had a wider view of the phenomenon than a lot of other researchers. I mean, he was willing to admit that it was an actual physical phenomenon in some cases, that it was also a psychic phenomenon, and thirdly, there were deception activities by human groups that seemed to cluster around it. And, you know, to admit all three of those and sort of hold judgment and not prematurely say what it was all about, it allowed him to see more of the phenomenon than anybody else, as far as I knew.
Well, and I think he was the first one to say, because David Jacobs has now done a lot of work in the deception area, I think, though, that Jacques was one of the first to talk about the possibility that, you know, these may not be the most friendliest of visitors here.
Well, that was his initial response, I think. After he was collaborating for a while with Whitley Strieber, it seemed to me he would say things that bothered me a bit, like, you know, UFOs are the control mechanism for evolution. Well, I don't know. How's that? You know?
Yeah.
But by and large, I think he is, you know, was about the best researcher we had. And I'm impressed with him that he disappeared, you know, that he said, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, well, matter of fact, we talked to him or his office several months ago, my producer Lisa, and I mean, he's out of it. I mean, he doesn't want any exposure or anything. Now, I thought maybe he may have been at a conference a couple months ago, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if he was there, if he attended, or whether he just had material there. But, you know, he can't get him on, and I would love to get him on this program.
Well, I assume that what he feels is he's done his work. He's, you know, done an amazing bunch of books, and, you know, even ufology from the Soviet Union and this and that, and you know, that's quite an all-consuming thing. And I think he stopped when he sort of saw that the research wasn't going anywhere. He said he's done his part, and I looked at his website, and he was complaining that to a certain degree, the whole thing was going in circles, you know, looking for anomalous events, cataloging the phenomenon, you know, and it wasn't getting to the next level where you could explain it. Now, maybe he didn't have the next level where he could explain it, but I think he got tired of just, you know, going in that circle. And also, I remember one thing that his website said, which is, you know, certainly the U.S. government is hiding a lot from us, but probably what it's hiding is its own ignorance. And I think that's wise. I'm sure the U.S. government has got vast number of reports about the phenomenon, which it is not sharing.
True.
But I don't think they necessarily understand it any better than we do.
You think they may have retrieved the vehicles, craft?
I don't know. I mean, Vallée...
A lot of people think so.
They certainly do. But, I mean, you know, Vallée is one who says that he has serious reservations about whether that Roswell event ever actually took place.
Right.
So...
Now, you know, do you believe that these UFOs are physical or dimensional, as some people say, coming from other portals,
well,
for example, other existences?
They're coming from other levels of being. And this is where we talk about traditional metaphysics, which I would like to define.
Please.
Because we use the word metaphysics nowadays. You know, you go into the metaphysical section of your bookstore and you see books on UFOs or witchcraft or, you know, whatever crystals there used to be a lot of. And
by the way, they need to move those to the front of the bookstores instead of where they keep them. They keep them in the back there.
Well, they're easy to find anyway. But what I'm saying is that traditional metaphysics is closer to mystical philosophy, I guess you would say.
Okay.
Plato is actually closer to traditional metaphysics than any of the people that you'd find in your metaphysical section of the store. And, you know, there are great sages from all the religious traditions and from Greek philosophy and such. And if you delve deeply into what they've said and what the scriptures of the major world religions say, there are, of course, vast differences, but there is a commonality. And the commonality, you can possibly get the vision that these are all pointing to the same reality from very different cultural and historical moments and, you know, mindsets, but they're looking at the same truth. And one of the truths that is almost universal, and this goes from, you know, the most developed religions to you know, tribal mythologies and shamanistic mythologies, is that being is arranged in levels. And
now, what do you mean by that?
Well, at the top of the hierarchy, let us say, is absolute reality, absolute truth, which is also called God.
Okay.
And strangely enough, this also embraces all the other levels at the same time. But then you can say, okay, there's God, but the next thing is the first reflection of God in his own mind, or, you know, and then, you know, the first created beings or the first major archetypes, archetypal ideas, which you call archangels, and that goes to the angelic plane, and it goes, and then after that you get to the psychic plane, which is pretty much what we look into when we look into the imagery in our own mind.
Okay, but do you believe, for example, that there are other planets in the universe, that there's other life forms in the universe?
Well, certainly we know there are other planets in the universe, and it is likely, although certainly not provable at this point, that there could be life on these other planets, because the universe is vast. But one of the things that Vallée points out is that there are simply too many UFO sightings of a real kind. I mean, when you ignore the ones which are not necessarily provable, or, you know, can be seen, you know, as other things, the ones which are really inexplicable, the number of those is vast. And we would have to be in the middle of a superhighway stretching from this planet to several other planets. There are simply too many of them for these spaceships coming through space from other planets.
Well, but you're thinking of it in terms of traditional propulsion. What if they have an ability to get here with the, you know, click of a two fingers?
Yes, they could do it, but simply there are too many of them to make it plausible that this is happening, coming from other planets.
Well, but they're coming from somewhere, regardless.
They're coming from a layer of existence which is sort of next door to our physical reality. And
like another universe?
Well, it's another plane of being, is what I call it. And some call it the etheric plane, some call it the animic plane.
Another level, perhaps?
Yeah, another level. And to make it a little more concrete, whatever you see before your eyes right now on your desk or whatever sitting there, those objects are the physical plane, the material plane, which is we understand through our senses. Whatever image you may see in your mind is in the psychic plane. And this isn't just in your personal mind. What you're seeing is your own little corner of an actual world, which unites, you know, all sentient beings through the psychic plane. But there's a plane between those two, which is a bit like actually what happens when somebody hallucinates. I always like to say it's impossible to see something that isn't there. When someone is hallucinating, and largely, you know, this happens through brain toxicity, either deliberate or not, you are seeing into an actual world, but you can't make sense of it because it is not natural for us to look into that world. You know, it's natural for us to be able to see, you know, the physical world around us, to be able to deal with the images in our mind. But when we see things out there in space, which, you know, are anomalous, this is very disrupting to us, and if you get too disrupted, you are called a schizophrenic if you cannot turn this on.
Well, that's your Charles. Stay with us. Lots more to talk with you about when we come back. Your website is charlesupton.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment as we continue to talk about the UFO situation, the possible deception situation. Next hour, we'll talk about end times, legends of the end, fascinating, about eight traditions that are pretty important, and then phone calls last hour right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, you've got many alternatives now with the Predictions television show. First of all, in Canada, you can watch it on cable or satellite, and that's available through the end of February, so take advantage of that. If you just want a link straight from the coasttocoastam.com website, there's a link directly to www.predictions.tv. You can watch it straight off that website. And also now a DVD is available for you. So all that's available, different alternatives if you want to have that prediction show. Predictions.tv. Charles, this visitation of these vast amounts of extraterrestrials, as we can call them, what's the agenda? What do they want?
Well, I will get to that in 2 seconds. I was in the middle of a very complex thought, which I want to simplify. You asked if these are physical beings, and I'm saying they come from a level of being which is very close to our physical reality, but not quite physical in our sense, which means they can impinge on us and have physical effects here and appear physically, but it doesn't seem like they can stay here for very long because it takes too much energy for them to come into our world. They're sort of like fish out of water.
Interesting. So we could, though, touch the craft, touch them?
I believe so.
All right. All right.
But, you know, why do we not really have a lot of crashed UFOs that we can get our hands on or, actual bodies? I don't think they can really exist here for any length of time. I may be wrong, but that's the impression I get.
All right.
So when we talk about agenda, well, some of it isn't an agenda. Some of it is just the effect of what one of my masters, René Guénon, who's a metaphysician who wrote 20th Century, he died 1950, and in his book, The Reign of Quantity and the Signs of the Times, in 1945, he said, well, we're getting near to the end of this world age and the end of the world, let us say, and one of the consequences and one of the causes is that the barrier between this world and the psychic plane, between material mm-hmm. and psychic reality, is wearing thin. And it wears thin, a lot of stuff pops through, and he says what pops through initially is stuff from what he calls the infrapsychic level, which is rather sinister. It's also possible for this barrier to open in a higher dimension and allow in an influx of the grace of God. But initially what's happening is we're having cracks in the lower reaches, you know, as if there were cracks in the floor, and up through the floor are coming rather negative psychic entities. Sometimes they're just coming through because they can't help it. The crack is there, and they're getting pulled through.
Are they demons?
Some of them are demons. In some cases, actually, what they are is what the Muslims call the jinn, or, you know, from which we get our word genie, you know. And the jinn are a whole realm of beings who they exist in a more multidimensional framework than mm-hmm. we do. But they're also created beings, and they're sort of another race that inhabits this universe. And the Muslims say some of the jinn are Muslim and some are not, which means some worship God and some worship God knows what. And so you cannot say that they're all evil. Now, Christians will tend to say all of these beings are demonic, and I think this is sort of the safe way to go because they're all dangerous whether or not they're demonic. But I think the actual truth is that some of them are simply, let us say, the nature spirits, you know, the spirits which connect the natural world to higher archetypes and bring in higher spiritual energy to keep the natural world alive.
Are these devils?
Well, what I just described would be the fairies, but some of them are indeed demons. And I think any beings that can do to people what the UFO abductors do, what else can you call them? There's this Eastern Orthodox priest who, named Seraphim Rose, who died, I think, in the 80s, and he wrote a book called Orthodoxy and the Religion of the Future, and he had a chapter in there about UFOs, which I thought was a great chapter, and he said what the appearances of UFOs and the encounters with UFO beings are precisely the same thing as the stories of Orthodox saints from the past in their encounter with demons. It's simply that the UFO beings are demons who have assumed a sort of a technological guise because that's the way we look at things nowadays in scientific ways.
Well, so, why do so many people, though, Charles, describe the aliens as being, most of them, you know, long, lanky, big heads, big eyes, that gray look? Or do they really look this way?
Well, what Jacques Vallée said, I think that is a modern myth, and I think we are seeing the myth. I think that their actual reality is so complex that we cannot make sense of them unless we cut them down to size. And so our common image of them nowadays is these elongated eye beings, before that, there were little green men with insect antennae, you know.
Yeah.
And before that, they may have appeared as devils or as fairies. But what Jacques Vallée says in his book on the UFO discoveries in the Soviet Union is the Soviet, at that time, researchers said the phenomenon is polyvalent. It can appear as any number of things. Even Max says this as well. They don't just appear as, the Whitley Strieber image of the elongated black-eyed gray. They appear as many things. But
are they shapeshifters?
They're shapeshifters. Actually, it's probably truer to say that we cannot see them as they are because they are more multidimensional than physical reality. So as we attempt to make sense out of them, there's some kind of interaction between our perception and what they are, and finally, you know, we settle on a particular image of them, and that's what we say we have seen. But we're not seeing all of what they are.
There is that abduction phenomenon that we were talking about. The late John Mack, of course, dedicated his life to that, as others have. And whatever was happening to these people, real or otherwise, was pretty awful in most cases.
And yet they tend to give their allegiance to it, even though it was awful. And that's what I really think is sinister. I mean, I remember Whitley Strieber was on a PBS documentary, and he made the statement, you know, when these beings came to me, they were the most horrible things I have ever encountered. But, you know, they were also the most amazing things I ever encountered. Mm-hmm. So I've been obsessed with them ever since. And I think this is very close to what we call demonic possession, or probably obsession is a better word. Possession means they can take control of you. Obsession means just that they bug you. And, you know, if we believed in God as a reality, and if we believed in angelic and spiritual influences as a real part of our lives, we would look at these incursions as simply very unfortunate events, like an automobile accident or a serious illness. And we would say our job is to get over this illness and to avoid having such accidents in the future. What is sad is so many people want to have these experiences because what I have to call normal religious experience is becoming harder and harder for many people because of the way society is going. And, you know, religion is falling into the shadow slowly but surely. And, you know, the religions are not in awfully good shape in themselves, but what's really happening is that our view is becoming scientific, not religious, which is a bit like, you know, if you became obsessed with video games and became the greatest player and inventor and marketer of video games in the world, but that was your whole life,
yeah.
And the rest of life, you know, I mean, that's wonderful, but there's so much more to life than what science can show.
You couldn't even cook a hot dog. You know?
No, you can't even cook a hot dog in a video game. That's a universal truth. That's true.
The ability for these people, let's call them the deceptors for a moment.
Okay.
You said there's a campaign of both human and non-human to deceive.
Well,
I'm curious about the human part.
So am I. I mean, I know little more than what Jacques Vallée said, but he simply said, well, if you look at a lot of UFO organizations and simply check into their boards of directors and their, you know, advisory boards and whatever, you will find people with backgrounds in the U.S. intelligence community. Not in every case, but there was enough, you know, to prick up his ears. And, I mean, the only sense I can make out of it is that this really is an attempt at mass mind control. For what purpose, I am not sure. But it may actually be based upon an interaction between certain elements of the intelligence community and these beings, a conscious interaction.
Do you think there's communication already underway there?
Say that again?
Do you think there's communication underway between these beings and government?
Well, I wouldn't say the government. I think that would be a bit much. But I think there's certain elements within the intelligence community and elsewhere who interact with them, and perhaps these people have to be called Satanists. I don't know quite what we mean by Satanists. It means many different things, but that's what they're doing. I mean,
you don't think there's a technological exchange going on or anything like that?
Well, it is, as Seraphim Rose said, this was his opinion, that the technology that is shown by the UFO aliens is entirely within the capability of demons to produce. Now, the idea of demonic technology is perhaps, you know, not a very widely explored area. You know, it reminds one of the things you see in the Lord of the Rings, you know.
Yeah.
But I think really the role of these beings is more to inspire us to produce certain technological developments. I don't think they necessarily hand us, you know, a prototype. But I think they do, you know, the whole idea that UFO aliens are implanting things in our bodies may simply represent a kind of demonic inspiration for us to do that ourselves. You know, and now we're developing technology where we can implant all sorts of computer chips within human beings. And the inspiration, you know, I would have to call it a demonic inspiration, may have come from these beings.
Past civilizations have talked about the possibility of us being seeded by extraterrestrials. They talk about the possibility of fallen angels, which,
well,
if you think of it, sounds like visitation.
Myth. Yeah, actually, we're all created by God. Everything. Even the UFO aliens are created by God. I don't think he went the way the way he wanted them to go. But
That's free choice for you.
Yeah. You know, we're tending to say, it's harder for us to understand what it would be to be created by God. It's becoming a little less plausible. And then, on the other hand, there are things like the intelligent design movement, which seem to prove, although not everybody believes this, that life is too complex to have developed by chance. And so, if people cannot believe in God and yet are confronted with information like this, the myth develops that, well, we must have been seeded here by extraterrestrials. But then who seeded them? You know, I mean, you have an infinite regression here.
Always have been one of the biggest questions.
Yeah. I don't think that ancient civilizations really believed this. Ancient civilizations believed we, you know, are created by God. And we perhaps, you know, somewhere along the line, some of God's servants are involved, angelic beings.
Well, based on Zechariah's interpretation, let's say, of the Sumerians, they believed that, you know, we were visited, altered, and everything else, if his interpretation of those texts and those tablets are correct.
Well, all archaic civilizations and primitive civilizations will tend to say that major human developments anyway, whether or not we were created by the gods, that human technologies are inspired. You know, that there was a visionary experience of a god who came and brought agriculture, a visionary experience of a god who came and brought, you know, stone architecture or metallurgy. And this is a very common way of looking at things.
You don't rule out, though, the possibility that the interpretation of the gods might be extraterrestrials. I agree with you. Somewhere along the line, you got to get to a point where someone made everything.
Yeah.
But I mean, is it possible that whatever might have come down to this planet a long time ago, or still does, that they were the ones perceived as being the gods?
Well, I think it's possible, but I don't think it's likely, because in older times, people sort of knew what gods were. They understood what a true visionary experience was, and that it wasn't simply something in their head, but it was the opening of a higher world. And through that world would come a gift. And this was understood. You know, like the Kachinas of the Pueblo Indians. In a certain sense, you can look at those as UFO aliens. I mean, they have funny things on their heads, like space, you know, like...
Right, or objects that look like craft.
Yeah, but in reality, these are spiritual beings who, you know, bring various gifts and even social forms to people who are open to them. And I think to look at them as UFO aliens is simply dragging it down to a too material level, and it's also mixing, you know, the kind of activity of, which you'd have to say angelic activity, with demonic activity.
Do you believe, Charles, that this deception is continuing right now?
Undoubtedly. I just don't know. I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist beyond a certain level.
Well, so I
do not follow, you know, what people say about who might be up to what when it comes to doing deceptions around UFO phenomena. I just looked at the information that came to me mostly from Vallée, but also from Mac and others, and I said to myself, well, it's understandable. I can understand that these could be physical craft and also psychic, because if they're coming from a psychic world and they can impinge upon the physical world temporarily but not stay here for long, that sort of explains that. But what is this deception business? It does seem to be something that is attempting to create
confusion.
Well, confusion, but it creates a myth that puts religion in the shadow, puts the sense of the actual concrete relationship between the human soul and God in the shadow.
Well, that comes back, though, to the original question, then. What do they want? What are they doing?
Well, essentially,
regardless of where they may be coming from,
they want to divert us from God because they like fascinating us. They want us to worship them, essentially, instead of God.
Then they are demons. They are devils.
Those are demons. I mean, there are other beings that you may encounter from that same level of existence who do not have that agenda. They just happen, you know, something happens to your consciousness, or as an anomalous interdimensional thing occurs, and you will see them, and they're not necessarily doing evil at all. They're just doing their thing, and you happen to have looked into their world.
Do you think...
But the ones that do the abductions and a lot of the UFO phenomena we're talking about do appear to be demons.
Do you think all the ufologists who are going in a totally different direction than you are, that they're all wrong?
Well...
The Stanton Friedmans, the late John Max, all of them?
In
Bud Hopkins?
I would think... Not necessarily wrong in what they have found as researchers, not necessarily wrong in the data they have collected, but in terms of the ultimate interpretation, yes, I think they're wrong.
Well, there are others who will back you, Charles. There are others who believe exactly the way you do, that these visitations are demonic. Nobody knows exactly where they may be coming from. They might be coming from other dimensions. They might be coming from, heck, a hole in the hollow earth, if that's possible.
Not likely.
No, I agree, not likely. But there are some people out there that would staunchly accept your thoughts that these things are demonic, that these beings are demonic, and that they have a different motivation for us than we think.
Well, you know, it's interesting. After I wrote The System of Antichrist, which is where these books came from, I opened the Quran, and I found that it actually said, and this is what I had said in my own book, that the jinn can become more or less addicted to human worship.
Yeah, well, that's...
And this actually corrupts them. Our tendency to worship them takes them away from what they're supposed to be doing in their relationship to God, and you know, gets them excited about being worshipped by us. Like what can happen to a celebrity? You know what I mean?
They like the power. In a moment, Legends of the End. What's all that about on Coast to Coast AM?